What good is a sword against sorcery?
Hey, I'm James. And one of my cats, he has a little acid reflux and gets a little pukey from time to time. But I want you to know that my greatest achievement today was not once, but twice, I was able to put a dirty piece of laundry underneath him as he did so and saved myself the cleanup. We're here to dork out about dungeons and design on Crumbling Keeps, the Dungeon Dorks. I should scrub that opening. Sword and sorcery, a genre of literature near and dear to my heart, created by Robert E. Howard, but picked up by many afterwards. There is a time where it was kind of the default to Dungeons and Dragons, or at least played a much larger role than it does today. Every edition moved a little bit farther away from it. Then World of Warcraft happened. Then Fourth Edition happened. And things haven't really ever been the same since. But to this day, some of my favorite games have many elements of sword and sorcery. And I like to pick systems when I'm playing that support that play style. Such as the Conan 2D20 system does a pretty good job. Northwind Adventures Hyperborea RPG doesn't do a shabby job either, though there is a good deal of weird science fantasy mixed into it. The two are not mutually exclusive, though. So what makes sword and sorcery, though? And what elements do you need in your game for it to be a sword and sorcery campaign? Well, maybe we can start by looking at what it's not. Modern day Dungeons and Dragons is kind of a kitchen sink approach, which can be fun. You can play anything. Do you want to be someone with a cat face? Cool. What about an elephant man? What about 27 different varieties of elf? A lot of this started with Tolkien and expanded from there, and older D&D used to be a mix kind of Tolkien and Howard, but we have certainly gone to Tolkien and Beyond route at this point. Sword and sorcery, though, in contrast, is very human-centric. I think that is one of the main differences, is that sword and sorcery focuses on the human. They are the center of the story, and there might be other species of lizard men or undead aberrations or whatever. And there's like, yeah, there's entire species of them out there, but it's not their story. It's the human story. And all of those things are relics of a time gone by or something from far away that you couldn't comprehend. There was a lot of Lovecraft and Howard crossover. So there is a sense of otherness kind of baked into it. And otherness can be problematic. I don't think it has to be, especially in sword and sorcery. I think it's a safe way playing a game in sword or sorcery that we can experience things outside of ourselves, things that we don't understand or have to understand. As long as that otherness isn't applied to humans. Humans are the default. Weird serpent people are not. And it's not just humans, it's sort of the rules of our world are also generally kind of the default. Anything that breaks them? Kind of sinister, kind of suspect. There were not many, finger quotes, good wizards in the Conan stories. Generally, if Conan came upon some sort of sorcery, it was to be feared. And the person who wielded it likely had to do unthinkable things, to warp their mind to be able to control such power. They generally weren't good dudes, you know? A lot of human sacrifice, things like that. So, sword and sorcery kind of sets up this natural order versus unnatural order. And the unnatural order being things that don't exist in our world, like serpent men and sorcery and undead and things like that. Most of the foes in a sword and sorcery campaign, they tend to be human. Until the finale. That's when the Eldritch Horrors get broken out. And now, why is this fun? You have all these monsters and you can't use them. You have all this magic, but you can't cast it. What's the story there? By making these things less frequent, by making them rare, you make them more special. When I play a 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons game and the player next to me says, "Oh, I'm casting Magic Missile," I know what that does. It follows a certain set of rules. Everyone knows what it does. Like, no one's like, "Whoa, you do what?" It's just, it's a part of the game. It's a part of the rules. Like, everyone uses magic. It's kind of just suspected that everyone knows about it at this point. Most of these games take place in worlds full of wizards. A player playing a magic-using character isn't unique. They're kind of one of many, right? That's a general consideration. But now imagine a game where that is not the case, where most of your struggles are very much type of struggles we might have today if we were to walk out into the woods with like an axe or something like that. Fighting against wild monsters, fighting against bandits and reavers and people that want to take your life or at least take what's yours. It's something maybe we can relate to, or at least we could see happening. And then, every so often, you slip in something more ominous, a large monstrosity from worlds unknown. And suddenly, it isn't just, oh, another group of goblins we have to fight. Ah, it's another dragon. We killed one of those last week. It's a, what the f is this, and what am I supposed to do about it? It creates actual tension. And maybe a little bit of terror, at least for the player characters, if nothing else. It's something unique. Same thing with magic. If you never see magic, and then something very subtle happens, maybe it's not a fireball that destroys like 20 monsters in a room. Maybe it's just a pot floats across the room. That hints at something. That says, holy crap, what else can this guy do if he just floated this pot against the room? No one can do that. This is unique. This is special. And that kind of specialness of these things is definitely a large part of sword and sorcery. Other things that maybe don't get talked about quite as much is that there's generally kind of real world social hierarchies that happen in, or not just that happen, but that are a focus in sword and sorcery games. And most of the time, like, kings are tyrannical. The people in charge generally don't have the best intentions for their subjects. There's a lot of good versus evil going on, and those at the top of the pyramid are generally evil. And that's most institutions. Rich merchants, probably evil. High priests and powerful wizards, yeah, pretty evil. A king of an empire? Oh, well, now that's just waiting for a heroic sword and sorcery hero to overthrow. And that's how Conan became king. He had to get rid of the despot before him. And of course, there's the Lovecraftian elements. And that ties into what I've been saying about the sorcery. A lot of times, monsters got pulled in from the great beyond. Old ones, Cthulhu-esque things, madness, things you could not even understand. Space was a dark, scary, endless expanse that humans would never come close to comprehending. And it contained things you couldn't even imagine. Same thing with the oceans. I mean, how many weird fish people came out of the oceans in Lovecraft stories? These were expanses where humans did not dominate and that they were nothing. They were fools to tap into them. It's a wizard scryed into the outer dark, and the outer dark was probably through space. If we look at the whole tale of the Elephant Man from Conan, that's a great weird science fantasy thing. There's an alien. It is a straight up alien, but with a Lovecraftian tint, and that makes aliens feel a little more ominous. It makes it feel like this is something larger and bigger than humans that we could not even hope to wrap our mind around. For our sword and sorcery, a bunch of barbarians wandering around. That's generally enough to say, I don't want to be around this, or I want to kill it. So, doing a sword and sorcery campaign starts in a planning phase. You have to decide what elements of whatever game system you're using you want allowed in there and what elements you don't. It's generally probably a good idea to keep the amount of like playable species to a low amount if you want to go more than human. I wouldn't allow too many because you want that opportunity to wander into things that are not known and that are not, well, normal or familiar. And if you can't play it as a character, it suddenly is more unfamiliar. So that's my list of what makes a game sword and sorcery. Maybe there's finer points I'm missing. If you have thoughts on this, I would love to hear them. Be the thought, these are things of sword and sorcery that I've missed. Be they, this is why sword and sorcery is problematic, or why you prefer other things. Whatever. Let's open a dialogue. I'd love to know what you're thinking. Go to crumblingkeep.com/question and record me a message, and maybe I'll make it on a future podcast episode. I hope maybe this made you want to run a sword and sorcery campaign, and that it helps if you go that route. And just remember, Crom laughs at your four wins. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you have any questions about anything I talked about here today or on any past episodes of Dungeon Dorks, go to crumblingkeep.com/question and ask away, or just check the link in the show notes.